Hey, welcome to Monday. We have a great podcast for you. We're going to talk a little bit about sanctuary cities and how they're upset and how Cher is now wearing a MAGA hat. I never saw that one coming. Cory Booker, too, apparently. We'll talk about sanctuary cities and how we can up that just a little bit. I mean, the president's all about show. Let's really put on a show. Joe's polls, Joe Biden, not looking real great. Pelosi is starting to minimize AOC and the real fanatics, except that's not going to be sitting well. Also, who should be funding, who the government should be funding, if anyone, and did you get a tax break? This one from the New York Times. You don't want to miss it. Also, don't forget, tonight, 5 o'clock, very special show. It's part two of Joe Biden's dicey history with helping his children. That's all he's doing.
Joe Biden's excellent adventures.
Yes. Mm-hmm. In China tonight at 5 o'clock, only on the Blaze TV.
Yeah, you should watch that. It's at blazetv.com/Glenn. If you use the promo code Glenn, you will get $10 off. It's something you should absolutely do because you're going to know all this information before it hits the, you know, before it hits the campaign cycle. It's coming. He's going to have to answer for this at some point. You might as well be up on it. Yeah. It's blazetv.com/Glenn.
And also, Stu's watching Game of Thrones tonight. He's not watched a single episode.
No.
To bring us up to speed tomorrow.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Oh, he's got a nice house, too.
Yeah, I got a nice house.
So you can get a lot from, like, when you go and borrow against his equity.
Yeah, I'm going to go borrow against the equity. He's got a lot of equity in that thing. Cost me $40 to do.
That's it? Because you got the online, you were able to get the notary stamp that faked
easy, mm-hmm. easy. The good thing is, he doesn't have home title lock.
No, it's his
fault. He's got a jacket.
The green jacket does not protect you against home title fraud, sadly.
Nope, that's what I found out last night. All right, you need somebody to watch over your home and your title. This is a very easy crime and a fastest growing crime in America. You need Home Title Lock. HomeTitleLock.com. You get a $100 search for free when you sign up. Boy, is Tiger Woods going to be surprised when he signs up. HomeTitleLock.com. That's HomeTitleLock.com.
I am fabulous, Glenn.
Are you?
Yes.
Yeah, I feel good today.
I do.
Usually
a dangerous thing.
Well,
usually when you feel good, I have to deal with PR nightmares for the next 6 weeks.
Well, either you say that when I feel really bad, too.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's a good point. I wonder what we're learning here.
So here's the thing. Donald Trump, today is the day that I love Donald Trump being the president of the United States because no one else would have the balls to do this. He came out and said, okay, so you won't help us out on the border. You don't think it's a problem, but everybody else in America seems to think it's a problem, but you don't. In fact, you've got your sanctuary cities. So I tell you what we're going to do. We got all these people that you just say release into America. What we're going to do instead is we're going to transport them to your sanctuary city and we'll just drop them off in your city. Good luck with that.
Yeah, I'm interested in this because I heard it's a radical proposal. He's out of control. You know, at first they just said it was something that was floated and that was bad enough. But now the president's really, really considering it.
This is bad.
And I want someone to ask, what is the negative? Explain to me what the negative is. The only one I've heard is it's going to cost more, which doesn't make any sense to me at all because there's sanctuary cities around every border in America. So you can just go to a close one. You don't have to go to San Francisco. That could be an option, potentially.
No, I hope it is an option.
See, that's the thing. It's like this is being treated as a troll, right, by the president of the United States. He's trolling them. And the trolling part, as you pointed out, is
great
really
fun. And in fact, I'm going to up the ante. I don't think it's troll enough, but we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I got to say, the trolling part of it is my least favorite part of this proposal. Listen to it, for example. let me give you my case. How is this bad for the cities, the sanctuary cities? Because I hear, you know, all these left-wing people coming out and saying, well, we can't bring all these people here. We can't even care for our own. I think it was Cher.
Cher.
She's like, we can't even care for our own here in California. You can't bring more people here. Wait, that's our argument, stupid.
Yes. I don't understand how they actually get out and tie their own shoes and make it in the world.
Yeah, they obviously have not thought these things through at all.
If that is your argument, you're on the wrong side.
Exactly. And maybe it's so fundamental to their belief that the real reason we don't want illegal immigrants here is because we're racists. Like, maybe that's what they actually believe. I've always thought that was just a dumb political tactic. Maybe that's what they actually believe. Because if you think the only reason we don't want people here is because we don't like Mexicans, well, then you're an idiot. I mean, we're happy to bring legal Mexican immigrants into this country. Happy to do it. The question here is whether we can take care of people who are illegal. So if you are saying that it's bad, it's a punishment essentially for these cities to get these illegal immigrants, you are admitting a foundational part of our argument. And if it's not true, well, then you're going to be happy. It's not a punishment, so you're not worried on the city side. How about for the immigrants? Is it bad for the immigrants? Well, you tell us all the time that the sanctuary cities are the only people treating them fairly. You tell us that the cities that are sanctuary cities are welcoming with open arms these people and are treating them better than the other places. Mm-hmm. So shouldn't it be, if we're going to be nice to illegal immigrants or people trying to claim asylum, that we should bring them to the cities that you identify as the only places they can be treated fairly in the United States?
Yes.
Isn't that good for immigrants?
Yes.
So now we found it's good for cities and it's good for the immigrants. What about the border towns themselves? The border towns that are not sanctuary cities. What about the cities that they're going to, these illegal immigrants or asylum seekers, are going to now that are not sanctuary cities? The people who do want to enforce our immigration laws and are instead forced to take thousands and thousands of illegal immigrants that they aren't welcoming with open arms. Is it fair to them?
No, it's not fair to them, and it's not fair to the immigrants either. These undocumented immigrants, because these are dangerous cities for them, because they're not welcomed like they are with open arms in places like San Francisco and Los Angeles and New York and even Austin, Texas. You've got open arms. You're saying, come here. What is the point of saying you're a sanctuary city? Because you're saying open arms. Hey, this is the place. If you're looking for sanctuary, nobody ever, Esmeralda didn't run into the House of the Hunchback, because she's like, hey, I want some soda. Does anybody have any soda in here? No, she cried sanctuary. You can't touch me. You can't take me out of here. You can't do anything. I'm safe here. That's why you have a sanctuary city. You're safe there. Every place it's not a sanctuary city, it's very unsafe. And as we've learned, nobody wants to feel unsafe. That's a safe zone for you. So we don't want to just let them come over to places that are not safe.
Exactly. The feelings are an important part of this, I think.
Yes.
And again, I think this can come off as a troll, but in reality.
No.
If it is, these cities are saying, we have the resources to deal with these people. We have the open arms to deal with it. We have the type of people who will accept illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. You guys don't. Mm-hmm. We're better than you. Mm-hmm. We've decided to violate federal law to signal our virtue on this issue. Mm-hmm. We should reward that behavior.
I agree with you 110%.
And the only thing, in the article initially and since, the only thing they can come up with, there's two things. One is it's going to cost more. Mm. We don't have the money for this.
Hey, it's the right thing to do.
Well, that's...
Do not put a price on the right thing to do.
But you do have to put, as I would argue in many other cases, as would you, that Congress has the power of the purse and there has to be money associated with these types of things. You can't just create money. You can't just print money to do this, right? So look, the government doesn't care about this, but I do.
There are so many... Stu, how dare you? What will it cost us not to do this?
See, again, you're just trolling.
No.
I'm saying this is a legitimate proposal.
I say, let's take them up on their offer.
Sure, I understand that. But like, they're like, so I'm listening to...
By the way, I don't want to just troll. In a minute, I'm going to tell you how I want this actually executed. I don't want to just troll. I sincerely want this to happen.
I am with you on this. I think this is actually a really good idea.
You know what? Mm-hmm. This program, I believe, if they say there's no money for buses, I believe this audience will raise the money to bus these people to sanctuary cities.
It's funny. I had the same thought. I'm like, okay, well, they're on a bus. They'll be on the bus a little bit longer. Will there be more associated cost? I guess. But first of all, they're close by. They keep talking about San Francisco. That would take a long time. But Glenn, according to at least ABC News, they're flying people to these cities. They're in planes at $7,000 an hour. That they're flying people to these cities. And they're like, well, if they have to fly them a little bit longer, it'll cost more. Flying them? How is that even a thought? Like, if they're going to Indiana, mm-hmm. they can get on a Greyhound bus mm-hmm. and go to Indiana mm-hmm. if that's where they're supposed mm-hmm. to be sent. And that's the other thing here is that...
Greyhound bus? I say we just get some yellow school buses.
Whatever. The point, though, is that the idea that if we can't hold them in our facilities, which, mm-hmm. by the way, Republicans mm-hmm. have asked for additional facilities mm-hmm. have been rejected mm-hmm. by Democrats. Mm-hmm. Very important mm-hmm. to remember. Mm-hmm. So if you can't, mm-hmm. you have to put them somewhere inside the United States. Mm-hmm. Why mm-hmm. would you not give them mm-hmm. to the people who say they want them?
Exactly right.
That is a good
exactly
option.
Exactly right.
And you can do it, by the way. There are border towns. There are places all across the border that are sanctuary cities.
Preach it,
you don't have to go to San Francisco or mm-hmm. somewhere in Alaska.
Yes.
You can bring them to the closest
Amen.
One and certainly
Amen.
Save money over flights with a bus.
Preach it. Now, may I tell you how I would like to see this unfold?
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and I want to tell you about something that you should either end your day with or start your morning with, and that is The News and Why It Matters. If you like this show, you're going to love The News and Why It Matters. It's a bunch of us that all get together at the end of the day and just talk about the stories that matter to you and your life. The News and Why It Matters. Look for it now wherever you download your favorite podcast. You know what's great about today? The Glenn Beck program has Mr. Pat Gray on. Hello, Pat. How are
Hello,
you?
Hello, Glenn.
So,
isn't that great? It's great, right?
It is great. And you know what's mm-hmm. so great about not only the Glenn Beck program having Pat Gray on, mm-hmm. we also have Stu here, and we're going to talk about how we can make these sanctuary cities very happy.
Right. And that's
very happy.
I'm all about that.
I am
all about it
too.
I think they're going to be thrilled. I know Mayor-elect Lori Lightfoot of Chicago is going to be incredibly happy.
Gordon's mom, Gordon's sister?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, okay.
Half-sister. Mm-hmm. This is Lori talking about what she wants to do with Chicago and illegal immigrants. Listen.
I don't think that we should take the bait every time the president puts out a provocative tweet. What I think we need to do is make sure that we are being very clear in speaking our values. We are a city that is a sanctuary city. We have immigrants from all over the world who call Chicago their home. They'll continue to do that, and we're going to continue to make sure that this is truly a welcoming community for those immigrants, and we want mm-hmm. them to come to the
Amen.
City of Chicago.
Lori,
hallelujah.
Lori, as you just said, we're a sanctuary city.
What happened to your voice? What's going on?
As Lori just said, they're a sanctuary city, and they love this immigrants from all over the world.
I mean, is she lying? Mm-hmm. She said they want to be a truly welcoming community.
Right.
It's wonderful.
I think we start in Chicago. And here's the great thing, America. This sounds like a bit. This sounds like something we would have said 15 years ago, and there was no chance of this happening. I think this president will do it.
That's what I love about this. He would.
He would.
He would do this.
He would. He's got a twitchy eye.
He is a
horse in a hospital.
It's why he was elected. It really is.
It is. It is.
We wondered the whole time. We know now. This is why he was elected, because he would do something like this.
Yeah.
Well, it was his plan to ship them to sanctuary cities, which I thought, that's genius. George W. Bush would never have done that.
No president would have ever done that. Now, listen,
never.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. It won't work unless it's a production. It will not work unless you have plane loads arriving all at the same time.
Planes, buses,
you've got
trains.
To have, it has to be an overwhelming city. And I think an overwhelming scene for one city. And I think you do it to one city and they stop.
So it'd be so hard to pick, though, because you got Chicago mouthing off.
Wait. Chicago is where it started. Remember last week we showed you that the Sanctuary City movement started in Chicago.
Oh, that was the first one?
We drop off. We drop them off at that church.
At that exact address where 19 charitable organizations mysteriously have their home base.
Right.
I think that makes sense. Chicago's the one. The only thing about Chicago is there, because, I mean, there's a part of this, again, that's a troll, right? Where, and that's what everyone's talking about, in that it probably is the type of thing that you want to make a big production about and let everybody know. Chicago is a big enough city that it is.
It can absorb
a lot more. That may be why they were looking at small and mid-sized cities rather than the large ones.
Along those lines is Cambridge, Mass. Their mayor just talked about this over the weekend. Mark McGovern of Cambridge said, "I'm proud Cambridge is a sanctuary city. Trump is a schoolyard bully who tries to intimidate and threaten people. I'm not intimidated.
Oh,
and if asylum seekers find their way to Cambridge, we'll welcome them." I'd love to put that to the test.
Oh,
will
that's
ya?
A great one.
Here's 78,000 from the last month. Good luck.
Yeah, I think, too, the other thing
I'd
about that is I like the idea of targeting not a city like Chicago that is absolutely struggling and can't even do things for themselves. Pick a nice, rich community.
Cambridge,
Massachusetts is a fantastic one. They got plenty of money.
Is the average salary?
Oh yeah, this is like you're talking about. This is the wealthiest nation on earth, Pat. Of course, we can help these immigrants.
Absolutely,
this is one of the wealthiest cities in the wealthiest nation on
earth. MIT is there.
MIT will probably open the doors just admit them into college. That's what I think is going to happen.
You don't even have to qualify.
Free college tuition at Harvard. I think Harvard. If they overwhelmed the city in any way, I think Harvard would open their gym doors.
Yeah, and have them housed there.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be great?
Because they're really nice.
And they've got an endowment, I don't know if you're aware, of $39.5 billion. Now, they could take every single one of these illegals and give them free college education for the next 50 years with that tuition, probably. Just apply it to educating illegals who come to Cambridge to live in your sanctuary city. It'd be awesome. I love this.
And you know what's going to happen in Cambridge? As we've been told over and over again, the crime rates are going to fall. They're going to drop through the floor because, as we know, immigrants' crime rates are lower.
They're lower
than citizens.
Here's the thing. Truth is no longer verifiable. We've taken the search for truth and disconnected it from all kinds of science and reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
Truth just becomes something that someone says and then someone else, equally as important or more important, repeats it. And then after so many people repeat it, it becomes true, okay? So we know if sanctuary cities had more people coming into them, the crime rate would, of course, fall.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so they tell us.
Right. So let's just put it to the test. Pat Gray, are you willing to say you were wrong if indeed we put 78,000 people in Cambridge and the crime rate does indeed fall? Are you willing to say you were wrong?
Yes.
Are you willing, Stu?
I think I am. Yeah.
I am too. If all of a sudden Cambridge just becomes this paradise, okay, we were wrong.
If property values go up, crime goes down, salaries go up, employment is better. I'll happily admit, I was wrong. Yeah,
I was wrong. I'll change.
It worked out really
I'll
well.
I'll change sides.
Yeah.
I'll change sides on this, but don't think it's going to happen. But you do. Now put your money, put your town, put your neighborhood, put your tax dollars where your big fat mouth is. because you forced us to do it. You forced us to do it. We are all putting our tax dollars into something we don't believe in. We're forced to do it. If we live near a sanctuary city, if we live, God forbid, near the border, we're all suffering from it. You in Cambridge, no, not so much.
Well, it's 7.6% Hispanic there. And about 70% white there.
Oh, my gosh. You know what the problem is?
There's too much diversity
in
Cambridge.
No, the problem is they don't have enough diversity.
Right.
You know what I mean? Let's
Irving, Texas is 25, 25, 25.
Let's take a bunch of people who don't speak English, mm-hmm. that have no intention of becoming an American, that just want their culture, mm-hmm. and let's drop them in Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if anyone in Cambridge would start to say, oh, this place has become
crazy. It's just
crazy.
Getting better. Isn't that what they'll say?
Of course they will.
They will.
But I'm wondering if anyone would say, Jesus, like we're losing what we were.
You know what a lot of people do on vacation, Glenn?
Right.
When you got a nice vacation with a family, you want to enjoy the great outdoors with your family, you go camping. Well, they would love a tent city in Cambridge. I think they would love a bunch of tents popping up all over the city for people to live.
Where you don't even have to go out of the city for camping.
It's right there for you.
And you know, you're talking about camping. Another place to do it is Portland, Oregon.
Oh, no, people love that. Yeah, people love the camping.
Yeah, I mean, those guys, those guys, you want to talk about hearts.
They camped out for a long time there.
Yeah, and they've got big hearts in Portland, Oregon. They would love to take care of, you know, 150,000.
Well, they would. They tried to shut down ICE completely.
Right, so we should send them there. And because they've got big hearts, they can take care of everything. The city is totally in control. Let's just drop 100,000 people into their population, see what happens.
I mean, maybe we could even give, you know what? The left is so pro-choice. They always are. We can give each illegal immigrant a choice. Do you want to go to City A that the mayor says this, or City B where the mayor says this? And we can have put them side by side and say, which one would you rather go to? And you know what? I bet a lot of them are going to pick the place that says specifically that they're a welcoming community to illegal immigrants.
Mm-hmm.
The people who say that, you know, we bring them here. We want them here.
Yeah, one city is fighting to abolish ICE. One city will not work with federal enforcement. Mm-hmm. One city will not arrest you. One city will not ask you any questions at all. Mm-hmm. And if you are stopped with drunk driving, don't worry about it. Don't worry.
We all have a few on the way home from work.
That's
the way it works.
Well, that's right.
Not American citizens, because they go to jail.
Well, yeah.
But,
but if you're not from here, then it's fine.
Yeah.
And we'll just let you go.
Right. I mean, what do you think? We're talking about hate mongers?
No.
Okay. Yeah, no. So you have that, or you have a DWI. You're not only in jail, then you're deported.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's not fair.
And the mayor and the city and the police and everybody else, they're all committed. In fact, they look at ICE as a partnership. Which city do you want to go to?
Oh, my goodness.
I'm going to Portland.
Oh, it's all about. You're all about
Cambridge.
Portland. You're about Cambridge. You're about Chicago.
Los Angeles.
And these are good places to go.
Here's
Chicago started the movement, right? They started the Sanctuary City movement. They started the caravan movement. San Francisco's got Nancy Pelosi's district right there, and we know she loves them.
What if you just drop them off at Nancy Pelosi's house? Certainly she'd be excited about that, wouldn't she? She'd love that.
Well, there's a giant wall around her house, though.
Oh, shoot.
That'd be hard.
Walls don't work.
In fact, they're immoral.
They won't work in this case, because if they want to get it, they'll get over that wall if they want to.
I'm telling you, warning, America. Warning. I've kind of come to a place in the last year where I've realized, you know what? My job is not to provide answers. It's really not, because I got none. My job is to warn you. That's my job. I'm on the gate. I can see a little over the horizon. My job is just to warn you. So listen to my warning. Heed it. Don't heed it. My hands are clean. I'm warning you now. there is going to be such a struggle on our border that the western half of America, at some point, you will have farmers, ranchers being slaughtered, and you will have people claiming this is their land and no longer part of the United States. It was stolen from them and they want it. Warning, if you continue going down this road, that is what will happen. These are not just all wonderful people that are coming over. You don't know. Would you say everyone in Seattle is a wonderful person? Pick the whitest white city in the U.S., whatever that city is. Would you say everybody in that city is great?
Of course not.
Of course not. Of course not. You are letting hundreds of thousands of people in. You have no idea who any of them are. It's ridiculous to think that some do not have ill intent, are not running from the law, and not because they were just persecuted. It's ridiculous to think otherwise. Warning.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
All right. Last week, I took you through several examples of the way Joe Biden apparently helps his close family members secure amazing business deals while he was vice president. One of those instances involved Joe Biden's younger brother, James, becoming an executive of a new construction company, even though he had absolutely no experience in construction whatsoever. 6 months after he joined the company, it scored a $1.5 billion contract to build 100,000 homes in war-torn Iraq. What are the odds? Here's a construction company that hires somebody as an advisor who has zero, and let me say it again, zero construction experience. And just a few months later, he is so good with his advice that that company gets a $1.5 billion contract from the United States government, which his brother is the vice president of. What are the odds?
It's a miracle.
Even the president of the company said to investors, it kind of helps to have the brother of the vice president as a partner. Oh, well, this isn't everything that's wrong with capitalism, is it? If you think it's good to be the vice president's brother, it's even better to be his son. On last Thursday's TV show, I did a major chalkboard explaining how Joe Biden's son, Hunter, came on the board of Ukraine's largest private natural gas company. Now, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Did Hunter have lots and lots of experience to be on the board of a gas company in the Ukraine? Well, he had as much experience as his uncle did in construction. Zero. Tonight on TV, I'm going back to the chalkboard for part two of Joe Biden's profile. And as bad as the Biden's activity was in Ukraine, it is the tip of the iceberg when you see the deals that have been struck in China. Now, to give you just a quick hint, and this isn't even a preview about how plugged in they are in China, I want to give you a separate story that we don't even have time to get into tonight. This should tell you how big tonight's episode is when this is a scrap that we couldn't even get. We had to leave this one on the edit floor. Chinese oil tycoon Yi Jianming worked overtime to get meetings with his top movers and shakers in the U.S. government. His efforts included, well, you just tell me, Stu, you're just a businessman. Mm-hmm. You want to do business with the United States. What do you have to do to get a meeting with, like, the vice president? What do you think you have to do if the vice president under Obama, what do you have to do? You just
message him on LinkedIn.
message him on LinkedIn. That's a good one.
That's a good start.
Send in your resume. Show how much of a mover and shaker you are.
Got to be a big deal.
Yeah, be a big deal. Have some merit behind that. Or you could donate $100,000 to the Clinton Foundation.
That's always another path, isn't it? It seems to be a path to so many things.
Right. I mean, it was almost a rite of passage for any foreigners that wanted access to anybody in the Obama administration. But it's weird because those are separate. Right?
Right, right, of course.
Okay, 2015, Mr. Yi worked on trying to connect with the Biden family. But by that point, as you will see tonight, Hunter Biden's company was deeply involved with Chinese businesses. At first, one of Mr. Yi's top lieutenants, a guy named Patrick Ho, met with Hunter Biden in Washington, D.C. That led Mr. Yi himself meeting with Hunter at a Miami hotel in 2017. At that meeting, Mr. Yi proposed partnering with Hunter Biden's firm to invest in U.S. infrastructure and energy. Well, there's nothing wrong with that, right? Then in November of 2017, Joe Biden's brother, James, was in the hotel lobby when he got a random call from Patrick Ho. Now this, remember, is Mr. Yi's top lieutenant. Ho was in deep trouble and told the vice president's brother that he was looking for a lawyer. Federal agents had arrested Ho in New York on allegations that he bribed African officials in Chad and Uganda for access to oil fields. Bribery? Wait a minute. That's awful. An awful lot like what was happening with the gas in the Ukraine. During Ho's trial, prosecutors showed that Mr. Yi's company had a side gig. Not only bribery, but he also was an arms dealer. Ho was ultimately convicted of conspiracy, attempted bribery, and money laundering. His boss, Mr. Yi, is now in Chinese custody at an undisclosed location. Now, perhaps the weirdest and most cryptic part of this whole episode is what James Biden told the New York Times when they interviewed him about that phone call from Patrick Ho. Listen carefully. James Biden said he was surprised by the call and believed that Ho had intended to reach Hunter Biden, Joe Biden's son. So he gave him Hunter's contact information. And then Joe's brother, James, said this, quote, "There's nothing else I have to say. I don't want to be dragged into this anymore." End quote. Dragged? Dragged into what? Who's dragging Joe Biden's brother into something nefarious? Presumably, the deep web of Chinese business connections that Joe Biden facilitated for his son while he was vice president might be something that his brother does not want to be dragged into. Probably the most disturbing aspects of the Chinese deals are the national security implications. Tonight, I will show you the partnerships that have been formed in China. I explain all of it on tonight's Glenn Beck program, only on Blaze TV. We also talked to Peter Schweitzer, who blew the lid off this scandal on Biden's activity, but no one seems to care. Perhaps it's because they haven't heard the story. They haven't seen it on the chalkboard. Tonight, things are heating up on blazetv.com/Glenn. blazetv.com/GLENN. If you haven't joined yet. Oh, man. This Joe Biden stuff is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and his polling lead is seemingly, I mean, evaporated at least in one poll. He now trails Bernie Sanders 29-24 in the latest poll from Emerson, which is a good pollster, but small sample size. The dates are right in the middle of the, you know, the peak of this sort of controversy. So whether this is a long-term thing or not, we don't know. Pete Buttigieg
is up to 9% now, is in third place. And then the kind of group of other contenders, including Kamala Harris and...
America's made their mind up on those guys.
O'Rourke and Warren as well are right there in 8%. That's in 7%, and then everybody else follows well behind. This is a national poll, by the way.
This is going to be... I'm convinced...
You make a lot of "I'm convinced" statements about politics that you later on say you were not so convinced about, or should not have been so convinced about.
Yeah, I was always convinced. I was just always wrong.
Right? Yes, you were.
I mean, I'm willing to admit I'm wrong.
No, this is never. You've never been a guy who says I can predict politics.
No,
perfectly.
I'm the exact opposite of that. I can't predict politics. I have no idea. No idea.
I mean,
but I can predict I can predict directions. I'm good at direction, you know, long-term direction.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel that this race is going to be won by somebody that is not in the system. Just not in the system. And that would be a Buttigieg or someone like that. That's a complete outsider. That when... Right now, the people who are really paying attention are the people who are politically connected and politically aware. I think the Democrats are so overplaying their hand that their arrogance is going to be their undoing this time around. And why I say that is when you see what... AOC and Ilhan Omar and all of these people are saying it's too far for the average Democrat, even the Democratic voter, not the ones in Washington. The ones in Washington are sick, but they're the ones, they're not going to get the vote because people see this game that they're playing and they're sick of it. They're sick of it.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi would love to get everything that AOC and Ilhan Omar are asking for. She'd love all of it.
She would.
She realizes that exactly what you're saying, it's too far for a lot of America.
Right.
She's used to dealing with the entire caucus, some people who are in purple districts where they won by 1 point, and they can't come out and endorse socialized medicine tomorrow, even though they may very well want it.
But here's the problem that... the Democrats, because they hated me and said everything that I said was you know, a conspiracy theory and stupid and whatever, that they didn't listen to the warning that I gave, not just to the American people, but I gave it more importantly to the Democrats. When I talked about The Coming Insurrection, that book from France, and it was written by the people who were sick of the progressives. They were the actual Marxist revolutionaries. And it started in, what a surprise, academia. And they were saying, you people have been in office forever. And we're so close now, we want it. Just take it. You guys are only doing this for yourself. You don't even believe in this. You're just doing this for your own power, and you're never going to complete the deal. You're just going to keep stringing us along. And that's why the insurrection was coming in France, which we have seen with the yellow vest. By the way, did you see the police were given permission to use live ammunition to bring down yellow vest protesters this weekend?
Mm.
Okay. Things are heating up in France, and that is where it started. The real radicals that said, we want change. Now, Nancy Pelosi can say she's a progressive all she want, but progressivism was not the answer. It was a means to the end. The end was to flip us red.
Not the, red state.
No, to flip us totalitarian, dictatorship. All I'm trying to, the words that didn't have the meaning that they have now. There is no meaning. In fact, it was Stuart Chase that said, after World War II, we just have to call this System X now, because fascism, communism, dictatorship, those are all words that have different meanings. So we don't have a word. We're just calling it System X. So progressivism was just to put in System X, which is top-down everything. we would have known it as communism or fascism or authoritarianism, statism. Nancy Pelosi doesn't realize you're not in charge anymore. You're not in charge anymore. You think you are. You thought you could use these radicals. You thought you could bring them in, give them a taste of power, teach them how the system works, then let them create their own little viruses, and you'd somehow be inoculated against it? You're not.
No, I mean, she certainly is dismissive of them. I mean, this video, can we play some of this? This
yes.
is Nancy Pelosi talking about, she gets to AOC and Ilhan Omar. Listen to how dismissive she is of them. They, I mean, at this point, the people who have held power for a long time hate this group of newcomers. They are not fans. They don't like the idea that they're getting all the attention. They're getting all the media love. Listen to this from Nancy Pelosi.
You yourself said that you're the only one who can unify everybody. And the question is, can you?
By and large, whatever orientation they came to Congress with, they know that we have to hold the center, that we have to go down the mainstream.
They know that?
They do.
But it doesn't look like that. It looks as if it's fractured.
She likes to minimize the conflicts within her caucus between the moderates and the progressives.
You have these wings, AOC and her group on one side.
Well, it's like five people.
No, it's the progressive group. It's more than
five. I'm a progressive, yeah.
No, you're not.
Well, she is. She is absolutely.
She is remember.
She's actually more progressive than them. She's progressing slowly. They're going for the revolution.
Correct.
Right?
But she sees progressivism as a destination.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a destination. No. It is a system to get you. It's like, I'm a train. No, you're that's not a destination. That's a vehicle that delivers you from one place to another. Progressivism is to progress you to another destination. The people at the other destination are saying, your train's too slow.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Also, today is Charity Day. Today, you're probably feeling your most charitable.
Right.
This is how you support other people. You pay your taxes. I bet you're feeling
Feeling not only charitable, strangely charitable and so very patriotic.
Yes. Super patriotic. This is basically July 4th, part two.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope you're feeling that way today. Mm-hmm. I know I am when the federal government comes into my account just sucks out a big chunk of it today.
Love
it. Excited about it.
Love it. Almost as much as I love it when they take it as when I read about how they wasted it.
Yeah, that's really fun, too.
I love that.
When you realize, and they're like, oh, when Nancy Pelosi says there's just no scraps left in the cupboard.
Mm.
We can't cut anymore. Mm. And you get these, you know, what was the, you had one the other day, like it was like several billion dollars in just mistaken payments. To people.
Oh, yeah.
Was it on the college thing? Was it?
It was on the Pell Grants.
Yeah, Pell Grants.
Pell Grants.
They screw it up.
Pay it, and you've already paid it. Pay it again.
And every once in a while, you like to stop and think about it when they say, like, oh, yeah, they made a $10 million mistake, a minor mistake when it comes to the government of the United States. They made $10 million payment to someone who didn't deserve it, or it's just disappeared or whatever. And you stop and think about it, and that is going to be more money in taxes than you will pay in your entire life. Plus, probably everybody you know, every dollar they will pay in their entire life. And that's that little kicker story that it's not even on the front page of the paper, if there was one. I don't know if they print them anymore, but it's like the inner, like you're in the little tiny little section of like thehill.com, like, you know, several clicks in, and they'll be like, oh yeah, they've wasted $10 million on this. That's everything you'll work for your whole life plus a lot. And that is like, when you think about it, how just depressing that is. These little mistakes, these little stories we bring up are real people's life's work going down the drain for nothing.
You could have every tax dollar you've ever put in back, plus all the tax dollars of everybody that you know back, and then some if they hadn't made that one mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And we blow it off
all the time. We don't
we
even
blow it off.
Barely even worth the mention. I mean, you think they every year they release that government waste report, Republicans mm-hmm. do, that show all the quirky things that they've spent money on. You know, they spent $500,000 on this story to see if snails can fly. And like, it's all this weird stuff. And you're like, oh, that's a funny kicker story that day. Those are people's life's work going down the drain over and over and over again every year. And nobody notices. I mean, you want to know how bad taxes are. And I think it's we're at the point where we need to start making these arguments and making them more profound. Because, I mean, listen to this. This is the New York Times today. And I just did this just a second ago, now that as I'm talking about this. Listen, this says, the gap between perception and reality on the tax cut appears to flow from a sustained and misleading effort by liberal opponents of the law to brand it as a broad middle class tax increase. This is the New York Times telling you this.
This is the Times.
Yes. They are telling you that it was a misleading effort by liberals that make people not understand this. Because we're seeing
long sustained.
Yeah. We're seeing now polls as low as 17% of people believe they got a tax cut, when the real number is well north of 60%, and probably even higher than that. We don't know, have the final numbers yet. They say the effort began in the fall of 2017 when Republicans prepared their first draft of this tax bill. And one tax policy center, the Independent Tax Policy Center, predicted it could raise taxes on nearly a third of middle class taxpayers. Now, that's not the bill that passed. It continued through Trump's signing of the law, even though the group's model showed, the same group that initially said it would raise taxes on people, the group's model showed that the revised bill would raise taxes on relatively few in the middle class. After the law went to effect, Democrats played down those estimates and instead highlighted projections that most Americans' taxes are set to increase in 2026 after the individual tax cuts are scheduled to expire. So they're saying your taxes are going to go up after the tax cuts go away, which of course is true.
This is,
but that's them. That's their tax. Those their tax rates, which are higher.
This is the amazing thing about the New York Times. At times, they tell the absolute truth.
Yeah.
At times, they'll disagree with what they just printed in the op-ed.
Yes, you know the op-ed will tell all these lies opposite. Will be echoed 100 times by all of their op-ed columnists.
Correct.
Just a couple.
But sometimes they do great reporting. It's such a weird thing. If you are really, truly just being a hack for the left, how does this person survive?
Yeah. It's a mix. I mean, I think that's important to note.
It is.
I mean, a lot of times when we're talking about real conservative arguments, you know, the basis for that, the source of that reliable information is the New York Times. Because mm-hmm. it's great to go to the left and say, this is the New York Times I'm showing you. This is them saying it, not me, not in National Review, not The Blaze, not Breitbart. Here it is, right here, New York Times. They say now that 3/4 of Democrats say they did not think they got a tax cut from the law. And the overall share of Americans who said that they got a tax cut just rose slightly since the initial argument. Experts are divided on whether the tax cut law was a good idea, but there is little disagreement on this core point. Most people got a tax cut. The Tax Policy Center estimates that 65% of people paid less under the law and only 6% paid more. The Joint Committee on Taxation, Congress's nonpartisan team of tax analysts, found that every income group would see a tax cut on average. So did the Institute of Taxation on Economic Policy, which is a left-leaning think tank. They went even further. They said every income group in every state would pay less on average.
Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And what's interesting about that is people aren't realizing these tax cuts because they say a relatively small amount. Some people got about $780 middle class, and they say, well, you know, $780 is nice. So you'd like to get $780, but you know, it was a few dollars in biweekly checks. And I think, and I just said this myself, I'm mad that I'm paying a giant chunk today. I have a giant tax bill to pay today, unfortunately. But the truth is I should be happy about that because my money was in my hands for longer. I was able to invest it. I was able to hold on to it. I was able to make interest. I did not make an interest-free loan to the government.
You know what's crazy is we use the federal government as a bank.
Yeah.
And it's the worst bank ever.
And we do the same thing with Social Security. It's right. The same idea.
We look at the federal government as a bank, and we hope we get a tax return. Well, you're getting the money you paid in, but you're not saving. You're not getting any interest on that. So they're not paying you interest.
No.
So you could have put that same amount in the bank and said, I'm going to take less every month. And I'm going to put it in the bank so it can earn interest. I'm going to put it in a CD. I'm going to put it in something safe, but it'll at least get 5% interest. And then come tax day, I will take that money and I'll cash it out and I'll pay exactly how much I need to pay. Instead, we don't do that. We let the government take all of our money. And then when they give us a year later after holding it and using it, then they give it back to us without any interest, and we celebrate.
Yeah.
Like it's a gift. Like the whole thing is a gift. Like, I didn't know I had any of that.
Yeah. I think it was
insane.
I want to say it was H&R Block last year that did an ad campaign about, like, it's tax refund day. Like, there's this great holiday. It's like, it's not a holiday. They've been stealing your money for a year. I mean, this is, we've been saying this point for how long? I mean, legitimately 30 years.
Reagan
said it. He said, if you, at the end of the year, if people had to just write a check, then this would be totally different. Why don't we push for that as actual policy? Why? We always talk about it. We always mention it.
I don't know. You know, because...
Make it quarterly checks or monthly checks or whatever it is.
Every time you get a paycheck. Every time you get a paycheck, it's not withheld. You have to write it out.
Write a check and send it in.
You have to write a check.
It's automatically, you know, you got to be able to... There has to be some action taken because it's just like your point with immigration. If we... take all the sanctuary cities and take illegal immigrants and spread them out across. There will be some impact to these cities, but most people might not notice the big impact.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it with a bunch of buses and they all arrive at the same time and you plop them down and everyone's going to notice, you do it with a lot of fanfare. This is what this is. It's fanfare. Make people notice what they're doing. Make people accountable to the actual people and the money that they're spending because people don't realize it. You know, we say this with health insurance, too. People don't know what the prices are.
This is why they developed this system.
Mm-hmm.
They developed this system because they knew you would revolt if you actually had to do it yourself. So they've made it. What thing does the government make easy for you? The government make anything easy for you?
You can't get it's impossible to do almost anything when
almost
it comes to
anything.
Government.
Except
give them your tax dollars.
They will take those tax dollars. Now, at the end of the year, it's a pain in the ass.
But that's to get your money back a lot of times.
Correct. But to pay your taxes every single paycheck, they make that so easy. And they take that burden away from you.
Thank you so much for that.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.